In the 15th century, two sailors set out to find new worlds, and one was Amerigo Vespucci, and the other was Christopher Columbus. Now, Amerigo was 5 years behind Columbus, but he did two things right. He positioned the new world as a separate continent, totally distinct from Asia. Now, this created a big news in the geography of his day. Now, what he also did was he wrote in great detail about his discoveries and theories. And just one set of these letters that he wrote was translated into 40 different languages over a 25-year period. Before Amerigo died, Spain granted him Castilian citizenship and gave him a major state post. And as a direct result, the Europeans credited Amerigo with the discovery of America. And that's how America got its name. Christopher Columbus, on the other hand, died in jail. This dramatic slice of history is what positioning is all about. How one person or company can come from behind and capture the imagination of the public. Positioning is what causes one business to stand out from the other in a way that few of us can imagine. Hi, I'm your host, Sean D'Souza from psychotactics.com. And today we have none other than Jack Trout, the co-author of the book Positioning, The Battle for Your Mind. A book that has sold hundreds of thousands of copies and is literally a Bible in many a company. Today, we have Jack to tell us and to give us his wisdom about how positioning can help us in a world that's got incredibly noisier and more fragmented. It's wonderful to have you on our show, Jack.
Well, thank you very much.
Jack, at what point, when you co-authored this book, did you have any inkling of how popular it would be and what impact it would have on marketing?
Well, if you go back in history, you started with the book, which is 1980. Actually, I wrote an article, the first article on the subject in 1969, 11 years prior to that. This was followed by another article, a three-part article in Advertising Age, which ran in 72, I believe. And that series of articles, that was run in 1972, was widely popular and sort of traveled around the world in reprint form. So, yeah, we knew that when we finally got around to publishing the book in 1980 that it would be a big success, because the subject, starting with what I wrote in 69, had an enormous running start, which not too many people were aware of.
Okay. The three things we're going to cover today, Jack, are clarifying positioning. The second thing is the application of positioning in today's world. And the third thing is repositioning. So let's start off with the first one, which is clarifying positioning. Now, positioning and uniqueness, they're often used in the same breath. Are they actually the same?
Absolutely. Definition of positioning is how you differentiate yourself in the mind of your customer and prospect.
Okay. But people always talk about positioning a product. What's the difference between positioning a product versus position of the mind?
Positioning in the mind is really where you're putting the product or the service or the company or whatever. In other words, it's a process of getting into the mind. Now, you can talk about how you're going to position a product, but until you get into the mind, you have not done the job.
Okay. Now, positioning is often said to be one of recognizing what the customer perceives about you. But what if you're starting with a blank slate? What if you're unknown? How do you create positioning?
Well, you just blank slates are always wonderful in that you can pretty much say what you want to say. But what you do there is just essentially express what this product is about, or what attribute that this product or what problem this product fixes. In other words, you. What I like to say is, look, you start everything with your competition, but if you don't have a lot of competition, you're starting something new, sure, you can pretty much say what you want to say. I think it's essentially, the blank slate is a very nice place to be.
Okay. Now, when we start to look around, sometimes we'll do this in our workshops, and we'll run several slides showing them different companies. And essentially, you're looking at, do they actually own a space in the customer's mind? And when you start to look at these different slides and you look at the customer reactions, you find that customers have a different understanding of the brand. So you take, one brand, say brand A, and say, what does this mean to you? and you have all of these different kinds of or different sets of customers with a different understanding of the brand.
That's not the way it usually works. If you've done a very good job about positioning, say, a BMW as the ultimate driving machine, you will discover that just about everybody you quiz will give you drivability, will give you that idea. And if you sort of set out a Visa credit card as being everywhere you want to be, you'll discover that most people think acceptability or its universal acceptability is what that card's about. So if you've done your job, you'll discover that just about everybody has the same fundamental idea in their mind.
Okay. This takes us to the second part. So we just looked at clarifying positioning, but what's the application of positioning in today's world? Now, despite enormous advertising and marketing budgets, how come companies aren't getting a share of the of our minds? How is it just because of noise or because of a lack of clarity?
It is basically a lack of clarity. I would say that when you study categories, you'll discover that. The ones that are sort of slipping into commoditization is because the brands have no clear focus, no clear position versus their competition, or they have mucked up their position with endless line extensions and sort of, you know, done that type of thing and have not been consistent in their message. So my feeling is that, yes, there's a ton of noise, and yes, it's difficult, but the problem is really a lack of clarity.
But if you're looking at, say, you've got like 30 pizza companies, you know, how that's extremely noisy in a small market. You'll find this with plumbing. You'll find this. We're not talking about big companies, but tinier companies, smaller companies. There was lots of competitors. How does someone actually stand out in a market like that?
Well, obviously, with some difficulties to answer, but I've done a lot of work in the pizza category, for example, since you bring that up. I mean, there was the leader. That would be Pizza Hut. They have sort of established a leadership position among the chains. Yes, you have the local operations, the smaller ones, but on the chain level, you start there. Domino's came in and did home delivery. They sort of preempted the idea of 30-minute guaranteed home delivery idea. Then along comes the number four guy, Little Caesars, was in there on price. Two for one. You buy one, you get one free type of thing. And then the fourth company who entered the category, which one I work with a lot, was Papa John's, and they came in on the strategy of ingredients, better pizza. And those have been the four players. His concept actually was so strong it overwhelmed Little Caesars, who's now gone pretty much. So you even though you're in a busy category, you still need a differentiating idea.
So this kind of goes slightly against the number one, number two in the category, right? Or are we creating new categories because we're looking?
No, it's number one, number two, number three. In other words, everybody kind of gets tries to own something within the category.
Okay. Can you give us some more examples of companies that seem to be getting it right? Because so many companies seem to be getting it wrong.
Oh, I agree. Well, in the automobile world, I think Toyota against the concept of reliability. They have really built that idea and pretty much given them that, and that's what's helping drive them into the leadership deal. You have BMW, which we've talked about on the driving idea. Volvo did preempt safety, but has now started to muck it up. They have not stayed with that idea and maintained leadership. For example, a lot of the new electronic safety ideas are coming out of the Japanese companies. So, unfortunately, they are not keeping up with this thing. Our friends at Nokia have, they're the leader conceptually, and leadership is a powerful idea. And a lot of people write about the fact that they're a dominant cell phone, which helps them enormously. The only thing they don't do is lay claim to the idea. The press has pretty accurately positioned them, but they should be telling the marketplace that they are the world's number one cell phone.
Okay. Is it just enough to tell them that it's the world's number one cell phone? For instance, I use my Nokia because I don't have to relearn a Nokia. You know, I can go from one Nokia to another, from one model to another, and I'm fine. Is it just something that you have to say, well, hey, this is, we're number one, or is it, you know, the difference, which is the...
Well, you're laying out two situations. In other words, when you're a customer of Nokia, to the existing base, you don't necessarily have to talk about leadership, though it doesn't hurt, because you know that you are using the world's number one phone. But, for example, the retaining of customers is always a big issue. And in the case of Nokia, by communicating the fact that essentially, if you buy a Nokia, you're able to stay with it. We're not going to leave you or make you change what you're used to, et cetera. So in other words, ease of use, especially in terms of continuity, is a very good keeping your customer strategy.
Okay. Now, which of the companies that you've seen that seem? I mean, you mentioned Volvo briefly, but which of the companies seem to be making the same mistakes over and over again?
I would say that General Motors is having a hard time. They have mucked up their brands, and they seem to be having a hard time defining clearly what's a Chevrolet, what's a Buick. In other words, what's a Pontiac. In other words, once upon a time everybody knew, and then they started to become everything for everybody and compete with each other. And so they have really not help themselves and continue to kind of make similar mistakes. Volkswagen, was a small and reliable car, and they have tried to sell expensive, big, fast Volkswagens, which will never work, especially in the U.S. And they've continued to make mistakes. A lot of it's driven by Wall Street. A lot of these people say, "How do I get bigger?" And that's where they begin to sort of lose focus, and that's because Wall Street's all about money and. And my sense is that that's one of the big culprits there.
Okay. So we're largely talking about the United States, but obviously, you work with different companies. Do you see anything on the world scene that's doing something really right?
I think many of the bigger companies now, I think Lever Brothers or even Procter & Gamble, I think they're adapting their messages and adapting themselves as they go around the globe better. I think they're getting very good at that. They essentially adjust their brands depending on the local competition. I remember I was in India and I noticed that the soap was sold in small packets because nobody had any money, so they wouldn't buy the big boxes of soap that the traditional soap companies did. And what they did is, I think it was Lever or I'm not
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it was Surf. It's Surf. Yep.
It was Surf. They put it into packets.
That's right.
So in other words, it's that adaptability thing, which is very smart.
Yep. Well, I used to live in India about...
So you know.
Yeah, 8 years ago. Yeah, there are lots of little brands that became quite big simply because of the way they repositioned themselves. A really good story is Kit Ply. Across India, all plywood was unbranded, and these guys decided to be this very reliable plywood. They called it boiling waterproof, and they'd show hot water being poured on the plywood or people with hot water being poured on them or something. But eventually, when people, because a large part of India didn't seem to buy ready-made furniture, but actually made their furniture with carpenters. It was quite important for a plywood company to get into their brains, and Kit Ply did really well to the point where it became like Xerox. Everyone would ask for Kit Ply, thinking that it was plywood because
that's impressive. Because I haven't seen anything like that in the United States. Plywood's a commodity. Nobody has done a branding job.
Yeah. Well, there's some very good, very interesting branding stories out of India, and I could probably send you some of them when we're done with this call.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Anyway, we're looking at positioning, like Volvo, which was solidly positioned as safe for a very long time, and Harvard University, which is prestigious, and right. BMW, which is the ultimate driving machine. And we see brands that go back even further, like Avis, and they said, we're number two, so why go with us? And that was great for that point in time, but is that positioning still relevant today?
It's hard to maintain. In other words, yes, I think... The problem with Avis is they constantly drifted off of that "we try harder" number two idea. They, when you carve out a position like that, you have to stay with it. You have to continue to find ways to prove that you are indeed trying harder. And I think that when people sort of dance away from that fundamental strategy, which they did, that's what happens. That's where things go bad. I think it's... I talk about so much of this is a search for the obvious. And once you have that powerful, obvious idea, you stay with it. You don't necessarily leave it. But you then have to innovate in a way that allows you to maintain that strategy.
So how do you do that? I mean, how obviously situations keep shifting, you know? They were number two. Let's assume they did get to number one. What would they have to do at that point in time? Is it...
Well, let's make the assumption they're never going to get to number one. That's the issue here. In other words, has Pepsi ever overtaken Coke? No. Have they closed the gap? Yeah. But generally, a leader stays a leader unless they make a gigantic mistake, which you can't ever bet on. So in other words, normally a number two is pretty much number two forever, but you can make a nice living as number two, provided you maintain that alternative idea. But you don't, to me, it's generally a leader is a leader.
I think Nintendo actually plays that game quite well. They're number three in the world, and I think they're more profitable than Xbox and the other game companies. So those guys are losing money, and Nintendo, that's number three, is actually making money. So that's quite interesting. You're saying that, okay, things change over time, but what about technology changes? Do you then have to kind of change the
well,
position?
Well, sure. In other words, I think... consider Sony the Walkman, and then the digital technology of the iPod arrived and wiped them out. In other words, there was a dramatic technology change. Now, the thing is, Sony should have been there with that idea. In other words, Sony should have said we should go to a digital Walkman. And if they had done that early on, and Kodak sat there while the digital film world came in and undermined them. So in other words, if you see a piece of technology that's out there, and one of the ironies of it, many companies I've discovered, they're well aware of it. They just don't like to attack the mother lode. That's what they hate to do. Actually, Kodak was one of the first companies to be actually working on digital photography. That was amazing. But they ignored it because it impacted the film business. So you have to be very willing to, as we say, attack yourself with a new technology. Because if you don't, somebody else will.
Okay. So we have this position that keeps shifting, but we also have specific companies, and they have, and they hold a specific space in our brains. But what do you make of a brand like, say, Virgin or Apple? They've got Virgin Airlines, Virgin Cola, Virgin everything. Apple has, iPod, iTouch, iPhone. Are they doing something right or something horribly wrong when it comes to...
Well, I would say Virgin's doing it wrong, and I think Apple's doing it right. I think that Virgin is Virgin everything, and that makes no sense to me. Whereas Apple has brands. Apple has iPod, iPhone, the Macintosh. In other words, they have sub-brands. So really what Apple has now become a brought-to-you-by brand. It's not the brand. I don't walk into a store and say, I want an Apple. No, I want an iPod. But people want a Mac. What do you use? Use a Mac? Yeah, I use a Mac. So I think that's where they're right, and as Virgin doesn't done that, Virgin's Virgin everything, and I think that's just very confusing.
So, I mean, has there been any studies into Virgin? I mean, are they profitable, or are they just...
That's the problem. Nobody knows. See, Virgin is privately held. You can't get the real numbers out of Virgin. It's like Donald Trump. You don't know what the hell whether he's making money or not. Because these are all privately held deals. And all Virgin does, Branson just licenses the Virgin name. Trump licenses his name. So they make money, but who knows? Virgin Cola was a disaster. Is Virgin Travel, they're going to have they have a budget airline in the United States? I don't think that's going to work very well. So you don't see the numbers, but people think it's a success, but I don't necessarily buy that until I see the numbers.
Okay. Now, we're talking about success, and, success is usually helped a lot by money. So what's the link between positioning and money?
I wrote a book called The Immutable Laws of Marketing, and,
yes,
and the 22nd law is the law of resources. And that law says without the proper resources, even the best ideas will not get off the ground. So money is what drives positioning and communications and building mindshare. And if you don't have the money, sooner or later someone's going to come along and take your idea with the money and get the job done and become... Because remember, the winner is, as you started out with Amerigo, you know, Amerigo Vespucci and Columbus, the winner is the first end of the mine, not necessarily the first. And our friend Amerigo, you know, spent a lot of money and a lot of energy doing articles and, you know, and getting into the mine with his discovery of America, and that's why he won the game.
So in today's world, say you've got a small business and you're in the market, it is possible to get a space in the mind with publicity and blogs and stuff so that people understand you. Is it still a factor of money?
It's still, well, let's put it this way. Yes, you can do it, and you can do it cheap, but cheap takes time. Cheap takes time, and that's an enemy. Time is the enemy of good strategy, because there's always a bunch of other guys out there looking to do a similar thing, and that's your problem. I said you can get away with no money if you've got lots of time. My sense is that today, in this very high-speed world, we don't have a lot of time.
Okay. Can you explain the concept of attributes as you see it, and do you think the market is just too saturated for attributes?
Well, attributes are hard, but in other words, probably the most popular way to differentiate a product is by attribute. Cavity prevention was Crest toothpaste. Colgate came in and did cavities, tartar. They did the whole deal, germ killing. So they came in on the attribute with Total. You know, we do it all. Visa on the attribute of acceptability or everywhere that you want to be. So in other words, as categories get formed, generally they all start out with attribute ideas you take ownership of. But it gets the market gets thinner and thinner. You run out of attributes pretty quickly. In toothpaste, it went for the taste, whitening. These are all attributes that people built franchises around, but you know you're limited because you want to, obviously the most popular attribute, cavity prevention, is where the business is, and there's limited. But then you go to other strategies. You go to leadership. You go to preference. You know, you go to ingredients. You know, there's magic there. So if there's no clear attribute you can preempt, like drivability in driving or safety, reliability with Toyota, well, then you have to find something else.
So when someone actually looks at a Colgate toothbrush or toothpaste, do they actually get a feeling of cavity prevention? Do you think so?
Yes, I think the Total product, which is what helped put them back in the first place after beating years in second place, what Total does, essentially it covered the three areas that people are concerned about their teeth: cavities, plaque, and gingivitis. So it was the first toothpaste that was essentially dealt with the whole tooth care situation. And that's what, and people got that pretty quickly.
Okay. Let's talk about the third part today, which is repositioning. Now, what would you define as repositioning, and under what circumstances would you recommend repositioning?
Well, it's a question of hanging a negative on your competition as a way to set up a positive. In other words, years and years ago, we had Scope hung bad tasting on Listerine and essentially used that to position themselves as the good tasting toothpaste, all right? I mean, a tooth mouthwash, which is an attribute. Listerine countered very effectively. They said it's the taste you hate twice a day, and if it tastes that bad, it must kill a lot of germs. So they were able to double back and maintain their leadership. So you're seeing a lot of this in the political world. I mean, Kerry lost to Bush in the second and the last presidential election because he was repositioned as being a flip-flopper.
Yep.
And which is a negative. And obviously this sets up the fact that Mr. Bush is a strong leader. He is not a flip-flopper. What our friends, the Democrats, should have done is position Bush as being strong but wrong. That's what they should have
done. Yeah, that's
which
right.
They didn't do.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake. And that's how Bush snuck in. And in the 06 elections, I was working with the Democrats, and I said, okay, we have to reposition the Republicans. And I said, here's your concept, incompetent. And they ran with that. And incompetent stuck. And that's why the Congress went back to the Democrats in the 06 elections. So, and then, and so in a way, now you're going to have McCain versus somebody, Obama or Hillary, and essentially they're going to reposition, I think, McCain as being same. It's essentially same as before. You want the same old stuff, like Bush's stuff, vote for him. So I think you're seeing a very aggressive repositioning in the political world, which I think is kind of interesting. So it's useful in some situations, but remember the concept. It's you're hanging a negative, but you're using it as a way of setting up a positive.
So first of all, two questions jumping in from there. The first thing is that how would you position Obama and Clinton to start with?
Well, I think Obama is all about, he's all about change. He's all about essentially getting away from the old, the usual, and essentially he's been positioned around the change idea. If you really want the same old cast of characters, vote for them. If you want something new and different and change and some new thinking, vote for me. Hillary has jumped on the experience idea. Well, yeah, he's about change, but I have experience. So her positioning is built around experience, which so to her base, you know, they picked that up pretty well, and Obama to the youth, especially the youth, they want something different, new, and change. So they picked that up. So we have a very interesting horse race between change versus experience.
But do you find, and this brings us to the second question that I was going to ask, do you find that most people, they get nervous, they try to, you know, adopt both the positions? I mean, obviously Hillary's going to position Obama or reposition him and has already done that, you know, this is all nice stuff, you know, but where are the facts?
Yeah, obviously that's always that's a vulnerability. He has to counter that thing, and essentially, but generally speaking, you got to remember where the market is. In every one of these situations, you got to say, well, where's the market? Well, the market is very upset with the direction of the country. I mean, Bush is widely disliked in this country, like 30% approval rating. So what Obama is, he's driving into the marketplace, which is at this point in time says, hey, I don't like the direction of the company. I want to change it. So that's why he has done so well in that, because he's more in tune with where the marketplace is.
Okay, so not actually talking about the candidates themselves. A company could actually not be as effective as the other company, but because the way they position themselves, they could come out on top till it comes to the stage where, hey, you know, the consumers now have to test the product. Is that right?
Well, your product has to support your strategy. In other words, In this very, very competitive world, believe me, you can't really get in there and win with an inferior product. It's very hard. People find you out instantly. I mean, you know, the bloggers will point out what your problem is. So people say, well, gee, can an inferior product win with better positioning? And I say no. Basically, your product has to be up to par. It has to be at least as good as. And it certainly has to line up with the strategy you're talking about.
So you could get away with stuff, say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. You could get away with it.
Today you get away with nothing. I mean, it's amazing how, and a lot of it's because of the communications aspect of the marketplace today. So much information is readily available about you. Well, you've seen it. I'm in the blogs. I mean, God. I mean, anything negative, boy, does it get blown up in a hurry by people. And so it is, you can't get away with anything. As I say, look, guys, you want to play today, you have to have that equivalent level of quality. You have to have an equivalent level of service. In other words, these are the things that get you into the game. If you don't have those things, you don't even get to play. There's just too much competition.
But when you look at repositioning the competition, is it worth the aggravation, or are you simply repositioning, or are you just simply repositioning the competition when you take on a position yourself? So those are two questions.
Well, if essentially you can take advantage of a weakness on their part or something that you're going against. In other words, it can be very helpful to set up your idea. In other words, if you put out a good tasting mouthwash, well, obviously what you want to do is dramatize the leader, which is a horrible tasting mouthwash. So in other words, you can use that to set up your positive. It's what you're doing is you're hanging a negative on somebody to get the positive. You got to have both though, and the positive is your basic position.
Okay. Now, in the book on positioning, you demonstrate how Pringles was repositioned by the competition, and so was aspirin. Do you think that they've recovered from this repositioning by the competition?
Pringles has improved their status, but not much. Pringles essentially was all, you know, their opening product was very much like cardboard. It came in little tennis ball cans, and it, you know, tasted like tennis balls. They've improved their flavor a lot, and it's gotten much better. But I think they're not what they had hoped they'd be. And aspirin's nowhere now. Aspirin is, first Tylenol, and now Advil. Advil has come in on top of Tylenol and essentially become, so you now have two dominant players. The aspirin was knocked out by Tylenol, and then Advil came in and it really has very effectively challenged Tylenol. And now you have a two-horse race. You have Tylenol, Advil dominating the category. I mean dominating. Coke and Pepsi. So, and everybody else is nowhere.
So if you were aspirin, would you just roll over and play dead? Or?
Yeah, well, you try to find some, for example, they use it for heart. You know, you take one a day. It's good for keeping your circulation going. You know, you try to find other perhaps uses beyond just a headache. To keep yourself alive, and they have that to some degree, so it's still around. But as a share, it's like, you know, small compared to what Tylenol and Advil are.
Okay. Now, you know, when you look at, say, yesterday or the day before, you're a crusader. We've seen this in politics just a few days ago with the governor. Today you're in PR hell.
Mr. Spitzer, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're in PR hell. You've been repositioned because of the circumstances, either of your own creation or because some bloggers found something or something. Is there any way out of that repositioning?
Well, it depends how serious the damage is. Spitzer, no. Spitzer's doomed. He's finished as a political player. I mean, if he's, you know, in other words, his career is over in the land of politics. It was too much, too big, and whatever. So in a way, he has to find a way to reposition himself somewhere else. He's not going to make it in his given world.
And what about someone like Martha Stewart?
Martha Stewart made a bit of a comeback, but she's not in anywhere what she was. I think she was not severely damaged like Spitzer was. I mean, you know, she was just a year in jail. A lot of people felt sorry for her. They felt that she was really, wasn't that serious, and it really wasn't. They just made an example of her. So there's a strong unfairness, and I think a lot of women felt that. So she survived, and she's doing okay. But Spitzer did it to himself. And not only that, Spitzer was evidently, he made a lot of enemies, and a lot of arrogance, and so when you do that and you make a big mistake, nobody comes to your defense. Nobody. So you got nothing left.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you know, you've been doing this for like, what, 35 years?
40 some odd years.
Yeah, okay. You probably run into half a dozen of these questions, if not all of these questions. But is there any question that, you know, you wish someone would ask you and they never did?
No, I think I've heard every question known to mankind on this subject. The most interesting questions I get are people say to me, well, you've been doing this such a long time. What's different? Do you still think what you're talking about is viable? I get a lot of that. And I said, that's a good question, but let me tell you what's different than when I started this stuff 40 years ago. The level of competition. The level of competition is intense, and I had no idea it would get this bad years ago, and because it's global, it's coming at you from everywhere. So I said, that's what's changed in the marketplace. Now, what's with positioning in this world? Well, let me tell you something. Positioning was always about differentiating yourself from competition in a clear, meaningful way. So guess what? The body of work, what I've written, whether it's positioning, differentiation, marketing warfare, the immutable laws of marketing, Coming Soon, In Search of the Obvious. These are all ideas that deal with competition. So in other words, my stuff today is probably more meaningful than it was 40 years ago, yeah, when we didn't have this kind of competition, or 30-some-odd years ago. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a good overview of where this world is at today.
All right. That's been quite interesting. We've actually gone right to the end, and what we covered today was the factor of clarifying positioning. We looked at the applications of positioning in today's world, and we looked at briefly at repositioning. Now, Jack, I'd like you to give our listeners any contact details or recommended products that you'd like them to read, maybe your own or others.
Well, I would say that there's a new edition of Differentiated Diet, which just came out. It's an update of my original one, and I think that's worth anybody who wants to understand how to do that. Very important. And I would say that if you want a synopsis of everything I've written, get a book called Trout on Strategy. And in coming, next year, a very interesting book called In Search of the Obvious, which is the key to an effective marketing strategy. So that sort of doubles back on saying, ladies and gentlemen, it's not about complexity. Marketing is a bloody mess because of all this complexity. It's a search for the obvious.
Okay. Thanks for being on our show, Jack. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Your book's been quite... I read it several times and still impressed when I go through it. So thanks for all the work you put in over the years, and we'll speak to you soon.
Okay, well, thank you, Sean, for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you would like to learn how you can improve your business, go to psychotactics.com, where you can get more information on audio, video, and in ebooks. Psychotactics also has tons of very helpful free articles that will help you understand the enigma of the human brain and the psychological triggers that cause your customer to buy. Go to psychotactics.com today. You'll be amazed at what you'll find there.